Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my very special guest, Tom Dooley, scientist, believer, and on a journey of faith for 30 years. Tom, it's good to have you and talk about this journey of faith. We were discussing before we started recording, how do we introduce you? And you have a story to tell, so I decided that your way of summing it up is I'm on a journey is probably the best way to put it, and just let it out there. But we were also talking about the reason for you coming. Usually, I have people on who they say I'm an escapee of this cult or that cult or the other cult or maybe some denomination they're disgruntled with. And I was talking to you right before we started. My favorite person to interview is somebody who has a polar opposite opinion of me, but I can talk to and I can learn from them, and they're nice about the way they present their opinion. So I'm bringing you in not knowing what your opinion is, but I saw you in the comic feeds and it was incredibly interesting what you were saying. So I thought I'm going to have you on and let's talk about your journey of faith. So maybe you could take a moment and just introduce yourself.
Yeah. So I'm Tom Dooley and I live in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm married. I've got several kids. My youngest son passed away 8 years ago. I've got 8 grandchildren. And I have a rather eclectic life. I'm a PhD scientist, former professor, business founder, entrepreneur. But I also have been very active in the faith realm. Done a lot of travel in Asia, doing itinerant speaking, leadership training. I've spent a lot of time in India, some in China, Africa, Europe as well. So when I have free time away from being a scientist and a businessman, I'm very often on a plane traveling the world somewhere. But the reason that I'm really on here is that I have watched a number of your interviews, and especially like the ones with Bob Scott. So I have never met Bob Scott personally. But I really have found his fascinating. And the more that I listened, I went, yeah, I could tick a few of the same boxes. So that's why I'm here. But it's nice to meet you personally, even though it's via the airwaves. But glad to be on your show.
Good to meet you as well. And yeah, Bob Scott's an interesting character. He and I, it's funny how that whole podcast came to be. I got wind of his book that he published. Obviously, that's what connected me between him and IHOP and all of my research. I wanted to know more about the Kansas City Fellowship, and who better to go to than somebody who was there, who isn't biased and in favor of IHOP, KC, all of that stuff in the NAR. But we got to talking, and it was funny because you could tell the level of caution he had in saying things that were critically thinking, but yet wouldn't cause me to lambast him. And he didn't know me from Adam. He didn't know that my personality right. doesn't do this, right? But I was doing the same thing to him. And we were both just dancing around our thoughts, right? And he started, you know, opening up a little bit more, and we got to talking. And we both came to the same point. There are many things that we like to critically think about that we could be totally wrong, totally off base, but it's an exploration, and to explore and understand and learn and grow, you have to make some mistakes. You have to go forward and just learn and make mistakes. And the funny part is people have been so trained to be so uptight and in this little bottle that you can't think outside. It's a box. You can't think outside of this box. If you do, you're suddenly doomed to hell, and everybody's going to, even in the main denomination, some of them will actually cut you off. I've actually experienced right. this in mainstream denominations. So there's some weirdness that happens there. And, you know, having escaped a cult, I'll say it feels cultish, but once you escape it and escape that mindset and you're free to think about it, it really opens up the door to a lot further research into what it is that you believe and why.
Yes, yes. Well, I understand that notion of narrow, you're either inside of my box or you're outside of God's will paradigm. And I've experienced it in fundamentalist evangelical camps. I've experienced it in more Pentecostal NAR camps. I even experienced it to some extent in my childhood, raised Roman Catholic in a really large Roman Catholic family. And so I also experienced a sense of you're either in the club or you're out of God's will. And that happens, I think, denominational blinders cause people to fixate on what their primary positions are. And if you deviate from that, then you're moving aside. I had an experience back in the 1980s where my wife and I were involved in an evangelical campus ministry. And that campus ministry sort of grew out of the Jesus People movement of the late 60s, early 70s. And so it had a lot of free-spirited ex-hippie, people drawn into it, but they went from one ditch to the other. They basically became like Mennonite hippies. So they went from, just drug and sex and partying and frat parties into the other ditch, which was let's dress like we're, German Anabaptists, and let's all break our food the same way. And there was a certain structure to it that was very immature, wherein the elders of that organization were all very young. They were like in their 20s. Maybe the oldest elder was almost 30. So they're all very young people that lacked wisdom. They lacked gray hair wisdom. And so, they taught us a lot of good things, but it also got very authoritarian. And the individual had no agency there. You could not be an individual. And although it was a campus-based ministry, they were encouraging people to leave college, to leave without getting degrees, to leave without getting professions, because they had an end times globalist kind of view that it looked very much like, Hal Lindsey's late great Planet Earth, that there was an urgency to it all. And this urgency is the most important thing in the world to do is to be an evangelist and see people saved and share gospel tracts. And that's more important than family. It's more important than anything else. And that urgency led to what I call a loss of individual agency. And one of the things I really like about your show is you're encouraging people, think for yourselves, examine it, go back and check it out, be a good Berean for yourself. So towards the end of that season, so that was 70s to 80s, I made a decision because they had a one-size-fits-all box that they were trying to have all men plug into, that the gifts of the Spirit were defined as one gift. All men had to be teaching elders, period. That was it. And if you didn't aspire to be a teaching elder, then you were second class in that movement. And I stood up and I said, I don't see that in the book of Ephesians. I don't see it in the book of 1 Corinthians. There's a diversity of gifts. The Spirit gives them freely. And I said, I'm leaving. I can't stay under this. I can't stay where I have no agency and my gifting and my calling, which may be not that, wasn't really honored and appreciated. And I had one of the brothers there. I said, hey, I'm leaving. And I just want to say, hey, let's stay in touch and have coffee. And I literally was told to my, directly, you and I have nothing in common but the weather henceforth. And you are listening to the devil, by leaving our sect, leaving our sort of cultic sect, and besides that, you're pursuing a PhD, which is also not good for one's mental health, and you're drinking from a bad fountain. And so this notion of insularity to me is antithetical to the gospel. It's just not right.
I would agree. And you mentioned so many things that are causing my researcher's brain to just spin in multiple directions. But I've been working with this guy that's helping me piece together what happened in the early years as the charismatic movement is starting to merge with the Jesus People movement and explode into the weirdness that it is today. And we have discovered, largely through him, but we have discovered that when the shepherding movement merged into the Jesus People movement, largely through people like Lonnie Frisbee, who was living in an apartment that was rented by, you know, the who was it? It was Derek Prince. And Ern Baxter, who was William Branham's campaign manager, was part of this mess. Well, after this weird thing happened, you had all of these hippies, free people, drug, sex, alcohol, live free, party hard. All of these people turned, like you said, polar opposite. And the combination of shepherding versus all of the weirdness that they already had, it created something that was unusual. And you find it wasn't probably mainstream among the movement, but you find that there were these little groups that started springing up where they were having adult spankings. They were having all kinds of things that you scratch your head and think, what on earth is this mess, man? How did it come to this? And all of that was a result. You know, you judge a tree by the fruit that it bears, right? Well, you see the extremes that came from this mass, and, you know, most of the people today, they just go straight to the NAR, point to the big figures. I honestly could care less about all of the big figures we see today. I'm more interested in examining the fruit that nobody's looking at, because there is so much weirdness out there that anybody who's in that type of movement, if they were just to look at the weirdness that it created, they would run screaming.
What it led to, some bad fruit. Number one, it caused people to de-emphasize what I'd call personal care, you know, soulish care, moving forward with life, with family, with jobs, with professions. And it that sense of urgency that they brought about, that everything had to be a gospel track in somebody's face, it drained people personal agency in their life. And then it also caused people to have, I think, an elitist view of theology, that they were right, everybody else was wrong, you're in my box, or you're doing the devil's bidding or something close to it. And I think that those two things were personally, well, they're erroneous biblically, but I think they caused great harm. And that harm is still carrying on decades later. So in that particular group, that group happened to be also coincidentally anti-charismatic. So it was not a charismatic group. It was authoritarian, elder-led, where, you know, if you wanted to make a decision about do I continue in college, you had to kind of go to the elders and ask them to pray for you and find out what the next 6 months of your life would be like. The other problem that it did was it damaged family relationships, because it de-emphasized the sense that you could trust one's own parents as a college kid. And that's not good. So it eroded confidence in parent-child relationships, which if I had a child in that organization today, I would, as a parent, I wouldn't like it. I'd be really upset, because if I'm paying tuition for my kid to go to college, and they're being taken aside by this organization and told, well, you can trust us because we're really the ones following the Bible and your parents aren't. And your parents aren't living in wisdom, you know, that's not a good thing. So I guess all that to say, you know, in that experience, that was a camp of life. I said I'm on a journey. In that season of life, there was some good, there was some bad, there was admixture in it. It was a little, there's some good. I had some great relationships. I got my wife out of that. Okay. I mean, I got married to a wonderful woman. We're still married, you know, been married 43 years. You know, that was great. But the theological side of it, not so good.
You know, it's interesting that you put it that way, because you mentioned that it wasn't all charismatic. It was more authoritarian. That's the point that I'm trying to detangle and understand in this journey. And it's very difficult to do, because I use the method. You examine the tree by the fruits it bears, and if you see the charismatic fruit that it bore, you assume that it's a charismatic trunk. But there's this one little intersection in time, right after Branham died, when it felt like, at least from the research that I've seen, it feels like there's this weird tug of war between those mm-hmm. who are going the charismatic direction, the prosperity gospel, word of faith, and the more authoritarian style, more rigid, fundamentalist. It's like there's this weird collision. And if you fast forward in time, that collision merges. So you have all of this in one big bundle of mess. The NAR mm-hmm. is largely authoritarian, you know, but they right. have also the mixture of the charismatics. But if you go back in time, it wasn't always that way. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to piece together what happened and why. And the best that I can tell is it looked like everybody was trying to figure out what, out of all of these horses that are running the race, which one is going to make the most money. And so the one that makes the most money wins, right? And then as each movement starts to grow and blossom and start reeling in the bucks, well, they realize that there wasn't a clear winner. So let's all party together and let's create these apostolic networks where we can party with your money and you can party with our money, and the congregants who are yeah. joining our conventions can give money to both of us and we can drain them dry. That's what yeah. appears to have yeah. happened.
I have an embellishment on that, and the embellishment is I blame Oklahoma. I think the money grub came from the oil wells of Oklahoma, and I'm not being derogatory of the state of Oklahoma. I'm a Kansan, so I grew up next door. But you can go down a laundry list of prosperity charlatans that were birthed out of Oklahoma, and the NAR then stole from their playbook prosperity charlatan tactics. But you know, there are a bunch of, you know, there's Copeland and Hagen and Roberts and Benny Hinn and Creflo Dollar and Paula White and Rod Parsley, and you know, this, and then Daystar. You got this whole laundry list of prosperity charlatans who created a business model, and their business model was how to make money. All right. They were really good at that. And NAR said, okay, well, let's take best practices from the Oklahoma crowd and let's carry it over into Peter Wagner's school of thought, which was much more apostolic prophetic oriented than theirs was. So there's no lack of money grubbing out there amongst Pentecostals, Charismatics, NAR. It's a common denominator of them. But I will say this, I will disavow this. The group I was part of, there was no money. None of us had any money. We were all broke. Everybody was poor. You know, everybody was young and poor. So, you know, our group was not motivated by money. We were motivated by get the gospel out.
Yeah, that's funny. In the Branham cults, there weren't too many people who had a lot of money. See, interestingly, as these things go over time, the leadership drains the common folk dry, the rank and file members, and then the rank and file members get into leadership. So there's this weird cycle, right, where yeah. now the leadership are poor and they need money, so they try to attract new members, and this cycle just goes and goes. But at the root of all of it, there seems to be money.
But it's Amway. It's Amway is what it is. It's, you know, 99% of the money goes up the pyramid to the top two levels, the executive level and executive lieutenant level. Anybody below that level, no, you're paying into the system. If you're at the executive tier, and it doesn't have to be a single individual, the executive tier could be a plurality of people. And then one notch below them, you know, in German, they would call it an Oberstleutnant. It's the one level below the general. And so that level also, lieutenant colonel level, you can also make some money. But in general, it's the top dogs that are really good with the sweaty handkerchief and the microphone prophets that get on TV. And then they're given false prophecies about, you know, if only, you know, 100, the Lord told me that 100 of you listening tonight will each write a check for $5,000. And you know, and by the way, God takes credit cards. I've written a chapter on this in one of my books called Half Truths or Lies. The opening chapter is called Right on the Money. Right on the Money. And the whole thing is about prosperity charlatanism, which has run amok in Pentecostalism and the charismatic movement, and also in the elite levels of NAR. And I'm familiar with leaders of the NAR. I'm acquaintances of those folks. So
yeah, the root of all of this mess, I think, is money. See, whenever Branham did what he did and brought the popularity of the, he was bringing in some of the spiritualist themes, the things that was more entertaining. He brought that to the right. Gospel and then brought this to a huge platform of entertainment. And he's working directly with members of the Kardashian family. That's the funny part about all of this. So he creates this entertainment gospel. Everybody joins into it. And it is a money train that he has created. Mm-hmm. And all of these, everybody wants to join into the train. We want our money too. Now, I will put a caveat to that. There were some people who joined in the revivals who legitimately were not after money. Their hearts were in the right place. They wanted to save souls, and they saw this as a new gospel. Although they were somewhat manipulated to think that this was the original gospel, not a new gospel, but they saw it as different from what the denominations had. And it was being presented to the wide audience as though the denominations had grown cold and formal. Ours is new, just like it was in the days of Jesus. So join us. It's a new gospel. But then once they get in it and they get in on the train, it's really hard to get back off. And it's what do you do with that, right? You're in this system that is generating all kinds of revenue. And mm-hmm. there, I think that there were many ministers who wanted out after they realized what it was. But how do you do this? How do you leave clean? Because when you do, the way that the authoritarian control worked, it trained the people that when you left this, you were actually leaving God. So yep. if a minister left, his whole congregation is gone. His whole income, mm-hmm. he loses everything that yep. he had. I've mm-hmm. talked to Branhamite ministers who've left, and that's exactly the problem. As soon as they left, one guy said his congregation went down to like five people, I think, five yep. or 10 people. And so he's filling the church every Sunday, and he says, I'm going to stand up for the gospel. I'm not going to preach Branhamism. If you want to go home and read that, whatever, that's fine. But in this church, I'm preaching only from the Bible. Most of his people left. And that's right. the way that this movement has created the mindset of the people.
You know, it's not uncommon in our day, in sort of the Americanized gospel, to equate the concept of prospering equals dollars, equals blessing by God, and they don't understand the illusion of blessing. There's an illusion of blessing. You can be operating on a stage in front of thousands of people with a microphone in hand, and you can have this nice little music playing in the background that's hypnotic, and then you pull a Benny Hinn trick on the stage, and then it looks as if God's present because you've hypnotized the audience with the music and the choice of songs and the lighting and the smoke cloud and whatever else you've done. And then you go say bam to somebody and they fall down. You know, it's a circus act. It's a circus act. And one of the things that, and John, I was a little concerned about actually coming on here today. You know, I do a lot of media work. I've been doing media for years, radio, TV, whatnot. People ask me, you know, to be on shows and stuff. And I was a little reluctant today because I just felt like, you know, I'm just not going to hold back today. I just want to put it out there. Look, I'm getting older. You know, I'm a grandpa and been there, done it. And I've contributed to the advancement of the kingdom of God in many aspects of my life. I still do, but I've had an awakening inside of me, maybe a fire in my belly, that is, if you don't take out your own trash, somebody else is going to take it out for you. And I believe that I'm part of that. You know, if you don't want to voluntarily clean the garbage out of your own house, don't doubt someday somebody's going to come in there and they're going to take all that trash out. And not only will they take the trash out, they might actually throw away something good. You might have had some collectibles that were actually valuable to the kingdom of God. And the problem I see in this last, you know, say 15 years, you know, it's been, one big charismatic leader falling for either, gold, girls, or glory. It's one of some. They fall, And we've got this laundry list of there are 20 of those names now. 20 big headliners. They're on TV, they're on TBN, they're on Daystar, whatever. And they're falling like ducks in an arcade, right? Just one after another. And the reason they're falling publicly is that they didn't have the courage to stand up in front of people and admit, this is my area of sin and I need help. I'm a sinner. I need help. You and I, we're kind of, we're not on their level. We're not microphone prophets and we're not up there. But we also aren't beholden to their paycheck. And they get used to that paycheck, and the paycheck becomes the very limiting reason that they won't acknowledge their own sin, their own corruption, their own money grubbing. And because of that, other people have to expose them. And so we're in a season of reckoning. And frankly, I'm grateful for it. I'm really tired of what is it? Every 2 months, another big name falls. And then people call me and go, oh my gosh, did you see that so and so fell? John, I've also had, and this is something that bothers me, is that I have a prophetic gift. It's a well-known one. I've got one. Now, I'm not using it the way these guys are using it. It's documented. And from since 2000, whenever I get stuff in prophetic dreams, I write them down. I journal all of them. So I have the before evidence and the after evidence. I got the dream, what I told people, and then what came true. I've got it, right? So I'm not building a case after the fact. I'm not going up on a stage with an iPad where I've looked online for somebody where they live and what their street address is, but it's just genuine. So in my heart, my heart's cry has been, I want people to be genuine. I want integrity. I want honesty. And I want vulnerability. If somebody screws up, sins, deal with it. Deal with it. So I think it's time for the house to be cleaned up. And frankly, it's probably the reason I'm on your show today is I like the fact that you're helping clean the house. You brought a broom in and you're saying, let's sweep some of the junk out.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. Everything that you said is resonating. Like my mind is going a million directions. One of the things that really bothers me, as a person who was close to my grandfather, who was the pastor, and anybody who is in that position, if you see the side of the people who aren't the rank and file members, it's a different experience, a totally different experience. You can watch the things that are said and watch the way it sways the audience, and the feeling, the entertainment, the it goes towards the emotion. You get mm-hmm. caught up in this emotion, and you mistakenly think that the emotion that you're experiencing is the Spirit of God, because mm-hmm. I'm experiencing this emotion while I'm in a church or while I'm saying Jesus, right, etc. But yet at the same time, I'm a musician, and you can do the same thing with music.
Absolutely.
You can get people excited, you can build up their emotion, and you can tear it down. You can build up, you can tear down. It's that way. And after you start to notice the patterns of how mm-hmm. a minister will build everybody up in the beginning, get them all excited, comfortable, tear them down to the ground, And then at the end, build them back up as this, there's this cycle, there's this pattern that happens in these sermons.
Yep.
And I take a lot of flack whenever I research people like Wimber, who really capitalized on the emotions and the feelings. But see, I experienced the other side of this, not what the rank and file members experience. I watch how the people can generate that emotion. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing that I have found that bothers me. If you're on that side of it, you know how it works, you also realize as you're doing it that it is a generated emotion. But you make the disconnect, you start to see it as a holy thing. They don't understand that I'm toying with their emotions, but I'm doing it for a greater purpose. Therefore, I must be doing God's work.
That's again tied to that notion of the illusion of blessing, the illusion of the anointing. You can manipulate it. You know, a lot of I've been involved in a fair chapter of my life in what we would term as mega churches or large seeker-friendly churches. I've probably been part of that 10 plus years of my life. And everything's scripted down to fast song, slow song, to the second, say this, have this emotive image up on the board, have this emotive, you know, 1 minute video clip of somebody who just suffered some trauma. And then you have the fundraising pitch or whatever. Been there, done it, seen it. It's part of theatrics. And you know, the Bible calls people like this hypocrites. The word hypocrite, an actor. We have a lot of actors that are up on stage running churches and organizations. And frankly, it's disillusioning when you see it. I'll give you one example of how sickening this is. I'm on a private jet. I'm going to India for a crusade meeting in India. Private jet ride. And the so-called evangelist is there, and I overheard the evangelist on there saying, I want you to know something. Benny just called me up and said he'd give me a check for $600,000 if I would organize a conference for him, one of his revival meetings with hundreds of thousands of people in Mumbai in India, if I would host it on one condition. He's the headliner and I'm the subordinate name on the marquee. And this guy got furious. No way are you going to buy me, Benny Hinn, for $600,000. The greatest evangelist in all of Asia. I'm the greatest of all of them. This is how sick this stuff is. It's showmanship. It's buying positions on stages. And been there. You know, I've seen it. And I'm frankly so tired of it. I'm just hanging out. I'm joining my heart with the young generation that says, if it ain't genuine, I don't want it. If it isn't, I want the genuine. I want people who have the fruit of the Spirit dwelling in them, love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and self-control. And I want them to be paramount and evident in their lives, just like I want it in mine. Now, honestly, I'm a poor excuse for all of those. All right, I'm not perfect on them, striving, moving in the right direction, I hope. But I want people to be genuine, and I want people to quit believing the baloney that they've been fed by these prosperity charlatans that are, they're ripping people off just out of their own narcissistic tendency. They want to be famous. They want to be special. And, you know, I'm acquainted with some of them. I know some of them. Some of them have endorsed my books. Okay, so you know, I'm just aware of it. There's a guy out there though. I don't know if you've read a book by David Ravenhill called "Surviving the Anointing." His father was Leonard Ravenhill. Really good book. And David Ravenhill, basically, his whole thesis is that you've never been tested until you've been given a microphone in glory. And and it's a really good book. It's a good book.
No, I haven't. I'll have to check it out. But everything you're saying is just resonating. You know, part of the reason I do what I do is I hate to see people be duped. And when you're on the side of the people who are doing the duping, it really makes you feel awful. And I don't know how a person can do that. I don't know how anybody who has studied the things that I have published can continue what they're doing, because they know the faults with it. They know these things are wrong. And yet many of these people who are, I mean, some of them were child predators and they're dubbed God's generals. How do you go forward with this? How do you continue in that lifestyle? But these people, what I've learned is there are people who are in leadership who have severed consciences. They simply don't care. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is you would think, because this was a money train, you would think that all of it ties back to money, and some of the people are just, they don't care, their conscience is severed because they're making money. But that's not the case with all of them. I don't know if it's because of recognition or power or what comes with it, but there's a reason why these people continue to do what they do, knowingly false some of the things that they're doing. But then on the flip side, I have compassion for people who are in the leadership who are unaware. There are people who are just, they're creating just as many victims as the ones who do know, but they have no idea that they're in this false system. And I have compassion for those, but what do you do with that? Because on one side, you have people who are being victimized by people who knowingly are victimizing them. And on the other side, you have the same level of victims. When those victims escape, they see the person who they were under, their leadership or their pastor or whatever, they see them as just as evil as the other side. And yet I see victims on all sides.
One of the guidance tools I'm using, and this is somebody could write this down, they find themselves in that spot. And it's this: be very careful of who you permit to influence. It's simple. Analyze and think about, who do you permit to influence you? And I have looked back and reviewed my life. Again, it's like weigh the fruit of it. You know, I've had seasons on my faith journey where, you know, I've been in that group in the 70s and the 80s that was kind of very authoritarian fundamentalist. I then was sort of in a evangelical, sort of pro-charismatic environment for a season, an NAR season. Now I'm analyzing all of them and I'm weighing the each season and I'm looking back on it, right? And I'm going, you know what? I really don't see a lot of good fruit out of a lot of it. I just don't. And it's one of the things that's happening. You know, the billion Catholics who are happy today because there's a new Pope today as we're doing this recording. You know, there are a billion Catholics, billion plus Catholics out there. And one of their philosophies is that they're centered in tradition because they're very slow and steady to change anything. Very, very slow and steady. Well, the Pentecostals are the exact opposite of that. Change everything as fast as you can. You know, if it ain't broke, fix it and do it right now. So in the NAR movement, it's you know, there's a breakthrough today. There's a, you know, oh boy, the stars are aligning. Therefore, you know, golly, we've got, you know, these clouds in the sky that this is a sign, you know, and it's in every pivots and shifts in a dime instantly. And there are theological implications of that in the NAR because it feeds into a lot of gullible people. There are a lot of gullible people that are tied into the charismatic / NAR Pentecostal world. And again, I'm not trying to parse them, I'm sort of bundling them up, but there's a high degree of gullibility. There's a high degree of trust, and they need to sit back, raise their hand and say, why did I permit that pastor? Why did I permit that elder? Why did I permit that so-called prophet on the stage? Why did I permit that person on TV to influence me? And I'm asking for people to wake up, grow up, be an adult, put on your own pants and your own boots, rise up and say, you know what? They don't have a right to speak into my life. They just don't. I've permitted them. I've granted them that privilege. They don't have a divine right to it. They don't. And frankly, you can, if you feel so led to kind of push back, then go find a group of other genuine truth seekers out there, like John, and start asking questions about why. Why do I believe this? Why have I been practicing this? And you're going to find that when you review your history, you know, I go back to my Catholic days as a farm boy in Kansas, and I can see good and bad in what I my theology. I can go to that next chapter of life. I can see good and bad. I can go to the next, and I can analyze those. And really, the goal then is eat the chicken, spit out the bones. But the problem with a lot of this modern day Pentecostal money-driven stage performing microphone prophet stuff is that, like you, I've heard you say, man, the water was so filthy, I didn't think there was anything redemptive left in the bathtub. You know, it was so muddy. Now, I'm an advocate for people hearing and experiencing promptings of the Spirit, the prophetic of the Spirit in their lives. I'm an advocate for it. But I'm not an advocate for all of this other nonsense they're doing. And frankly, I'm a critic of the very thing that I do. I'm a critic of it. That's why I'm very careful. I write things down. I record it. I tell people. And if I'm wrong, then I fess up to it. So I think we need more scrutiny in that. It's not just we need discernment. I just think that a lot of these guys have been raised in that old Oklahoma money-grubbing stage performance mentality, and now it's bled over into the C. Peter Wagner school and, you know, that whole group. And look, I know Chuck Pierce. I know Judge Sheets. I know a bunch of these people, right? I know them. There's some good in them. There's some not so good in them. But I can tell you one thing I don't like is I really don't appreciate the elitist authoritarianism that's there. That we've got it right. We've got a corner on the Word of God. It's we're the prophets hearing from God. We're hearing who the next president's going to be, and you need to listen to us. And I'll tell you, it really irritated me immensely. If you go back in time a few years ago, when it was round two for Donald Trump, all the prophets, all the predictive prophets, they were all out there. And they're into secondhand smoke. The first one says, oh, Trump's for sure going to get in that prior cycle. Oh, he's in. And secondhand smoke, they all start saying it. And before long, the entire cadre all said, Trump is going to be elected directly into a second term. Trump, Trump, Trump. This is the way it's going to go. And I'm telling you, John, it burned me up inside because I went, no, this is secondhand smoke. This is not true. But who would listen to me? Nobody. They don't care. They don't care because they don't want somebody to discern it. They don't want another voice challenging that. So that's some of the stuff that I've been through in recent days that has really, you know, gotten under my skin and kind of opened me up to say, hey, I'm going to throw my name in the hat too. I'm tired of it.
You know, you made a point that Bob Scott likes to make. It's not on just the leadership, although all of this does make you angry, like you said, but there is a responsibility on the people who are joining into these leaders. He has brought that out several times in his podcast, and I want to make sure that I emphasize that because what I heard you say really resonated. There comes a point in time in everybody's life, whether you're a victim, whether you're under the mind control of the cult, whatever it is, I have a strong feeling that some of the larger movements have, with this authoritarian component, have a level of mind control. And when people escape that, they say, oh, I was blinded and I was under this thing that I didn't know who I was or what I was and I left it. But I was under the same thing. And I was born and raised under the same thing. So from birth, I was told that if this man said the sky is green, my eyes must not be able to see the blue. That's the way it works. Right. However, there comes a point in everybody's life, whenever you're in that type of system, when that burning question starts to hit you and you start to think, well, what is this? Is this real? Are my eyes really messed up and I can't see the green sky? Is it really blue? And you start to go through that, but you have to make a conscious decision to suppress it. And I strongly feel that even the people who are in cults who are under the mind control, there's a point, and Dr. Stephen Hassan mentions this in his book, there's a cult identity that suppresses your authentic self. However, your authentic self does surface whenever your guards go down, when your cult guards go down. I've experienced that whenever I was in the cult, my guards went down. I started feeling my authentic self and realizing that something just doesn't feel right. But then you actively, consciously suppress it. So I feel that there is a responsibility on the people who are in these type of systems to wake up and just critically think, ask some questions, you know.
Right.
However, I understand that there's that fear of asking questions because that's another component that they have introduced into the whole movement. You can't ask questions. If you do, you're actually questioning God, my brother and my sister. You're doing the devil's work when you do this. And for that, that really, like you said, that angers me.
The issue that I think was attractive, where am I culpable even in my past? Well, number one, I have a teachable spirit, which means I'm open. I'm open to suggestion. I'm open to leadership. I'm opening myself up, right? So I'm not putting up a fierce brick wall up front. I'm willing to be led. But I also found that the pseudo family that is developed in a passionate Christian community can override that conscious mind. Because you want to be accepted, you want to be loved, you want to be appreciated. So there's a desire, there's a searching for significance that's found in those relationships that can cause you to suppress and overrule, abrogate some of those other things that, you know, just aren't right. Like, I shouldn't listen to what this elder, teacher, pastor, prophet, apostle is saying. I shouldn't listen to them, but I also enjoy the community I'm in and I don't want to rock the boat. So there's that social dynamic that keeps you in it. The group that I started out this journey describing was one that was based on college kids, age, you know, 18 to young 20s. They're away from their family at home. They create like a pseudo family, a new family that is spiritually passionate, loving. You eat meals together. And what they did was that they controlled the bandwidth of your life. You had no free time. You might have been a college student, but you were a part-time college student because you had church meetings on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, Friday night, Bible studies, you know, early morning rise-ups, you know, whatever. There was an authoritarian model that was set that said that in order to be pleasing to God, you had to do all of these works. Everything had to be performance-oriented. And I think a lot of people get involved in groups where it becomes a pseudo-family for them. And therefore, they set their logical mind aside and they just go, well, I don't have to think about those tough questions. I don't even have to think about, you know, is Mike Bickle ever possibly a sexual predator in the past? You know, I don't even have to think about that. You know, I can set it aside. I've had instances, John, where I've been called upon to go see ministers with promptings that the Spirit's given me for them, including people that were prominent, and would go tell them specifically, let's say, information I got in a dream about them. And I would go tell them. And I've had examples of people who should not have been on the platform. And one in particular, I told him, and he was blowing and going. And I said, the first time I met him, I said, I really feel strongly that you're out of God's will and that you really ought to consider stepping down and becoming an itinerant minister. Long story short, that came true. And it came true because of exposure of a really horrible pattern of sin in his life. And so I think what we need to do is we need to be willing to admit where we're weak, where we're at fault. Why have we followed somebody? Why have we given them our ear? And then wake up someday and just go, you know, It was a privilege to grant you that. I'm taking it back. And so for me, I started this review of life at the end of 2019, and it was right before COVID hit, and I worked on COVID. I did research on COVID and treatments for COVID. And boy, did I ever, as a scientist working in biomedical research, have to sink deep into be very careful of who you listen to, of who you trust. And that's a whole nother, boy, that's a whole nother episode another day.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. I can't even imagine being in that. COVID impacted me greatly. But so all of this said, we've talked about all of the bad things that are going on and how upset we are that people are taking advantage of other people. Let's flip it over. What advice would you give to people who are being taken advantage of?
I would seek wise counsel from family or a trusted outside ministry. Go elsewhere. Look elsewhere. If you're stuck in a denominational cocoon, then reach outside of it. Okay. Go to somebody who is an elder, a counselor, somebody outside of that denomination. I call it a cocoon. You're wrapped in there. And you know, you can't get out. You can't break free. You're like mummified in it. So look outside of it, and also look to the advice of those who are known for wisdom. People who understand the book of Proverbs, people who get what wisdom is and discernment, hang out with them. So associate outside of that denomination and with wise people. That I would do. The other thing I would do is say, put yourself out there in ministry. Put yourself out. Engage. Use your own gifting and calling to the best of your knowledge and become active in some new form of ministry. Find a new avenue of ministry. For me, the last 8 years, I teach women who have at the Love Lady Center in Birmingham, Alabama. It's the nation's largest faith-based recovery center. We have women coming out of incarceration and substance abuse. And so every week I'm there teaching them, and I'm teaching them in an environment that isn't my church. It's outside of that. And I absolutely love it. So I'm getting to use, you know, to him whom much is given, much is required. So I know the Bible. I teach intro to the Bible. I teach women of the Bible. I teach classes to women that are far less fortunate than me. They've not had the privileges of life that I've had. So I invest in them. And I find there's something really nice and warming of your heart that when you tie back into that Isaiah 58 principle of, you know, it's really about the widow and the orphan and the poor, and focus, get away from the platform ministry and the events. And I'm going to go chase the next rain cloud to Lakeland, Florida, or to Toronto. I mean, stop this stuff. Just stop it. You know, the Holy Spirit is resident in believers, in us. I don't need to go to Lakeland, Florida to experience the Holy Spirit. I don't need to go to Toronto, Canada to experience. Look, I've been all over. I've been to big, big, big meetings in Africa and India, huge meetings. I can tell you what, I can get more joy in the presence of the Holy Spirit hanging out with 50 women who are former drug addicts on Mondays than I can get in a rally of 500,000 people in Africa. Okay? The Holy Spirit is active and working in the lives of these folks. And it's not some stage performance. So those are my practical steps.
Well, all of that resonates with me. As we've discussed a little bit before the show, I like real people. I like to talk to people who are not afraid to express their opinion, even if it differs than mine, and who are genuine people. I have a real problem after having grown up in this mess that I was in, being around people who aren't genuine. You can immediately see it, you can read it. And what's funny is, as we were trying to determine what is our pathway after leaving, which church do we join? What's funny is you would go into a church and you could read it off of the pastors. You could go in and say, this is a genuine guy. This I can really resonate with him. I may not agree with all of his doctrine, but this person believes what he's saying. And then one of them we experienced, I was like, good Lord, man, why is this guy doing this? he does not belong behind the pulpit. If you don't believe what you're saying, don't say it, man.
Yeah.
And so I have a feeling that if people were to just put on that level of critical thinking, just you can sense it. As a human, you can detect when another human is just putting on a show. The problem is, like we've harped on, and I won't continue, the problem is that so many people have got used to the show. So I'll follow up and add to what you said. Get rid of the show, man. This Christianity is not supposed to be entertainment, but we've turned it into that today, and it's just a mess that should have never been. But thank you so much for doing this.
Well, hey, it's been a real privilege to be with you, John, and thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want to share your story, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.